morning, everyone. Welcome to the Fairbanks City Council regular work session. This Tuesday morning, August 6th, 2024. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mayor Prus.
Here.
Mr. Cleworth.
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Here.
Mr. Marnie.
I'm here.
Ms. Rogers.
Here.
Ms. Tidwell.
Here.
Mr. Ringstad.
Here. Okay. First up, we have Ordinance 6283, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code, enacting Section 10-207 that require vacant buildings to be secured and registered, establishing fines for violations of these requirements. Introduced by myself, Councilmember Sprinkle, and Ringstead. Myself, both this ordinance and Ordinance 6285, my personal thought is we're doing enough already. I don't know if we need to go this far yet. Ms. Sprinkle, your thoughts?
I can wait. I don't want to wait long, but I would love to. I'd like to hang on to this. A lot of buildings in my area that I know are like this, they are blight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still present.
Okay, and Mr. Ringstead?
I guess I'm kind of in the same spot. I'm not in a rush to get it done, but I think proceeding cautiously is not a bad idea either.
That'd be at our next meeting on a reading. This is a work session.
Okay.
So, okay.
Okay.
Any other discussion on this? Mr. Cleworth.
After talking to, you know, Officer Elsey and others on it, that the theory of having people actually register a building that's going to be vacated or they're going to be out of state or something would be a plus for us at the city. Because if we can have somehow the rights to, in advance, to enter a building that we think is being occupied illegally, that would save us a lot of time trying to track down an owner because we would have their name on file and hopefully in advance permission to actually go into a building if we need to. I don't believe in charging, which this thing does. This would be, we're going to be asking for their help to give us an inventory and to give us a tool to deal faster. One of the problems we've always had is trying to locate an owner of a property, and that just takes time. Especially if they're absentee. So I just think we need a little different focus on it, but I don't know legally how we can get in advance the right to enter that property. I guess I would maybe ask staff to investigate that a little bit and see what it would take to set up the paperwork with these owners in their absence. But to have the registry, I think that'd be a good idea. So.
Ms. Sprinkle?
This program was started in Anchorage, so we've...
That does not impress me.
It just, maybe not, but I'm just going to let you know that that's how they have established the outreach. So I figure there's precedence there. In addition, I think that, like Jerry says, if he's not going to let... if we have a front-loaded... data of who owns what, even if they're not in the building, sometimes people go on property, and that if you can trespass them, that also helps. So having that connection is really, really smart. So I would love to continue working with this. Don't need it right now, but I feel like this is a strong piece of a help.
Okay. Mr. Marnie.
So where are we sitting as far as the hiring of this code enforcer that, you know, we were going to handle the blight situation? Has that progressed, hopefully?
No. It's taken a turn for the worse. We targeted a person. I'll give you his name, Sean Rice. Perfect individual with everything involved. However, his the AFL-CIO and the national side is determining right now if he can take it. Their original thought was if he took this job, he loses his retirement. And so we're trying to work through that for him. And talked with him again this weekend. I believe he's worth waiting for. We're trying to work through it. So, but that's the status of it. Yep. So, Mr. Ringstad.
I like your thoughts, Jerry. That makes sense to me, too. I'd be interested to see what we could come up with, how you legally do that and what it entails. But getting ahead of it as opposed to playing catch-up afterwards makes more sense to me to try and do that. We're always trying to clean it up afterwards.
Yeah. Madam Clerk, when did we postpone this to? Second week or the first meeting in?
It's the 26th.
The what?
The August 26th.
Okay. So my thought is for Mr. Clearworth, Ms. Sprinkle, and Mr. Ringstead, think about this and probably have a better postponement date farther back. So there are some good parts of this. I understand it. But as this reads now, it's not as open as I would like it. Conceptually, it's good, but I think we can do better with it. So be thinking about how long does it take for a rewrite on or edits or inserts on something like this. Okay, going on to item number 3, ordinance 6285. Yeah, I've talked to a couple people, builders, and you know, we have to, if we're going to do something like this, we have to know what will work and target what will work. So far, I don't know what will work, and so I don't know what to target. Any thoughts?
Sorry, I missed a part of your question. Who is our target? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Is it builders? Is it people, developers? Is it people building a house? Is it people are remodeling something that needs to be remodeled, 100 years old?
I think it's everyone. Anybody putting money into a residence or commercial.
What I'm having troubles with, personally, is will the financial incentive we good even warrant them doing it versus them doing it anyway? We're trying to offer an incentive to get it done. Most people at this seems like do it anyway, don't look at the financial incentives that we can give that are so great.
I don't know. That's
Mr. Ringstead.
I think I like the idea of trying to encourage anyone and everyone. If you're going to go into a large commercial operation, you're probably going to run the numbers differently than a small property owner. Either they might want a different kind of incentive, and I'm not sure if this affects both of them, but an investor might take a different approach than just an owner or an owner-occupied facility. And I think the trick is trying to figure out how you set something broadly enough or specific enough to try and hit each one differently.
Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling that our next meeting will be postponing this one too farther back.
But tell me what you want from the postponement, because I'll work on this.
What I want is someone to figure out, okay, if we offer, say, a house that went and had, or a structure that has, say, $100,000 worth of remodel, what's their financial benefit from us?
Just the math that you want?
Yeah, well, you know, is it the building permit? And, you know, basically that's what we give them. And do we abate the taxes on it? You know, we can calculate all that out. But will that financial incentive bring people in to do it versus they're going to do it anyway? That's what I have to understand. Mr. Marnie. Then Ms. Rogers.
Well, I listened to the borough meeting on the 25th, and there was a gentleman there that built, I believe his last name is Cosgrove, may be wrong, but he built 2 8-plexes over by Hunter School, and he's in a third building, a third now. It was just the red tape. It was a quagmire over there for their paperwork.
That's David Costello.
Okay, Costello. Okay. Have you talked to him then?
Oh, yeah. He sits next to John on the Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing Board of Directors.
Okay. Well, that to me might cure a lot of the issues if we streamline that and made it easy to work with.
Was that for the borough?
That was at the 25th.
So we don't want that, is what you're saying. We don't want
that. We don't want the quagmire. Yeah, okay. He left it alone because it was just
bad taste in his mouth.
Yeah.
Onerous, okay.
So, again, with 6285, I would guesstimate that we have a lot more work to do and review on this. So we'll probably be postponing it. Think of a date.
Okay.
And then think about a working strategy on this. Mr. Cleaworth.
During that thought process, one thing that's missing here is whether it's a transferable item.
Yeah.
Two, you see the fiscal note on the end here. So if you have, say, $1 million total development inside city, the loss of revenue is about $6,000. Is there a plan by council members to replace the lost revenue? Because under the tax cap, you cannot get that back. You will eventually add it to the tax rolls at the end of whatever length they apply for here. But in the meantime, we'll take a hit. And looking at the financial future that we were given by the Finance Committee, that concerns me.
Ms. Sprinkle?
It's that $6,000 isn't a loss. We just don't make it for the next 2 or 3 years. That, I think, is a misnomer.
Well, then you also have the calculations that have to be determined. And what is the prescribed formula for that?
Okay. But
yeah,
just,
so we have work to do on that.
It's not that we're not taking money away. We're just not calling it money made.
And,
that's a difference.
You know, do you calculate it off their assessed value change? Do you calculate it off their building permit value? How do you calculate the value from where they start to where they end? We have to look at that. Mr. Ringstead.
Margarita, at some point as we move into this, I think it'd be worth having a discussion to see so we understand exactly how this would work relative to what Jerry's saying. I'm not today, but if you could think about that and explain it so my simple brain can figure it out.
Any other questions on Ordinance 6285 before I move on? Okay, let's go to Ordinance 6287, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code Section 2-149E, fiscal note on ordinances and resolutions, advanced to August 12th. And Mr. Cleaworth, you introduce this?
The council's seen this before. Hopefully there's going to be two parts to this. On the first page there, under the section one, it says A. It says a summary of the financial effects of an ordinance or a resolution. We're going to be working on that part to see if we can't get it back to just simply an ordinance. When we spend money, usually you go through a public hearing process. One, the fiscal notes are a benefit to us on council so that we know what it costs, and we should know what it costs. And two, for the general public to see the same information that we're seeing so that they can testify on it if they desire to. A resolution doesn't have a public hearing process. They can speak at the beginning of a meeting, essentially, but it's not the same format that we have in the ordinance. Anyway, we're working on that. That's not so important to get done immediately. But the problem we saw was on the second page there under E. The fiscal note requirement was put in by Council Member Stiver many years ago. And it came about simply because a lot of times the council was adopting ordinances in the blind, essentially, as to cost. And the borough had been doing this for quite some time, but we finally followed suit. And it was smart to do it. But the last part of it, E, negates the whole thing. It says the city council may waive the requirements of this section, and failure to comply with this section does not invalidate the action. What's the point of having it if we're going to invalidate, or you don't have to comply with it? I think we need to comply with it, and for the sake of edification of the council members and the general public, they need to see what the costs are of the things that we pass. So that's my pitch.
Okay. Mr. Ringstead.
You know, as I read that last E, it almost sounds like a defensive maneuver for a time when maybe fiscal notes weren't always there. And rather than leaving the door open for somebody to say that's invalid and have to go through it and clean up the mess, I would think at this point we're pretty effectively doing fiscal notes on just about everything, better than maybe we were at one point. And my take is it's probably not necessary to say we can waive it. I mean, I guess the truth of the matter, you can go back and clean up whatever you want to clean up in some form or fashion, but it does seem to me to be almost like, well, we're not serious about it. So I agree to take that section E out of there.
Ms. Sprinkle?
No, I'm...
Lights on. Oh! Well, we're going to move on from this one from that. Okay. Item 5 on our agenda, Ordinance 6288, an ordinance establishing incentive bonus program within the Fairbanks Public Works Department for recruitment and retention. This advanced to August 12th. This one was something I introduced. I gave everyone a schedule of the amounts. The year-to-date savings is $245,000. I want to take about $62,000 of that. You know, I look at this as reinvestment and retention. We've had a loss of personnel over there with exceptional history, and we're coming into winter. And we have the option, you know, we have the salary savings, but where are we going to spend it? My thought is to reinvest a portion of it, not all of it. And this is so far just year to date that we've had over there. Now, many ways we can go about this. I thought the best way was not to open up the CBA, not to give percentage payroll increases, a one-time amount by the time frame they've been with the city of Fairbanks. That is one way we can give credit where credit is due with longevity. That's how I looked at it. Mr. Ringstead, Mr. Marnie, you went out and talked with our new director. Mr. Marnie, what did you learn?
Well, to put it bluntly, this is just a Band-Aid. And we met with the foreman all here today and the director. And I know back in March, I believe it was March, that Ms. Tidwell and I were involved with you and Mike about fixing their health care issue. Mm-hmm. And I know that gets into the weeds as far as CBAs and that, but to me, I think that is better spent money than doing this blanket bonus. Mm-hmm. That's my two cents.
Ms. Ringstead.
I think clearly in our discussion with these guys, the health care is an issue. They're feeling like over the past 2 years, every time they got a pay raise, it all just went out the door to the health care. So at the end of the day, they didn't take home any more money than they did before. I think that the health care is clearly must be a problem somewhere. And I don't know enough about it to fix it. So I guess I too was kind of thinking this is a Band-Aid kind of situation. I think we need to start looking at that is, and I clearly don't know enough about it. But we gotta take a look at, see what we can do to help those folks.
Basically, in approximately 1 year, we open up the CBA with them.
Right. So we've got time, and I think we need to start looking to understand before we get into the negotiating that. We need to figure out what's in there and what's costing so much, and what kind of options are out there, and understanding how that's different than the rest of our employees going there. I do have a specific question on Section 4, where we're saying it's retroactive to July 1, 2024. And I'm not sure what that means. Is that anybody hired after July 1, 2024, or what is
prior?
So it's retroactive.
On or before? Ms. Sprinkle?
I don't think it says that.
We can change that verbiage if that's what's needed.
So,
Ms. Sprinkle?
I guess what I'm wondering is, when does the year start? When does that, I mean, they have to stay for a year to keep that money, it looks like. Is that for next year? Is that for this year? And when does that calendar start?
Could you repeat that question?
Well, you're saying that they have to work here for 1 year to keep that money. When does that calendar start?
Their calendar year.
When they got hired?
Yeah.
So if they've already been hired, then they exist in the calendar. So I guess, does that mean?
Say someone got hired on June 31st, 2024.
June 31st.
They're in year one. They get hired on July 5th, 2024. They're not available for this.
But this is for people who are already hired.
Yes.
So I guess they get the money tomorrow. They have to be here for another year for that money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But when does that money start counting? Is it from January 1 this year?
It will.
Or does it start when we give it to them? I guess that's what I'm confused by.
Okay. Mr. Sanders, what were you thinking on that one?
I think that Section 4 states that it would be July 1st of next year is when it'd be over.
I'm not sure it says that.
Mr. Marnie.
Well, during our conversations, I asked, the foremans here, why did they stay with the city this long, and why didn't they leave? And one, they love the 410s. I think we have a great option for them there. And the other part was that their spouses are in jobs that pay well, and that way they don't, have to, they enjoy the 410s, but they don't have to seek other work because they're comfortable. But, that health care, something about $1,800 a month was mentioned, was their cost, and that I don't know how they do it.
And that's the thing about it. That's something we don't control.
I understand.
That's their side of the equation.
I understand.
And so, we have, like you said, a Band-Aid right now. That's a long-term discussion. I mean, that's CBA. That's why are you in that program with them? I mean, well, that's the question to them. Why are you in this one? Is there something better that you can get into? And they're going to say, well, we're in a national union and yada, yada, yada. So we're probably not going to have much input on that, except for a percentage that the city pays. That's CBA. Mr. Cleworth.
Thank you. I mean, this whole thing is kind of interesting, but it gets into a lot of side issues here. One is we have an EIP plan that kicks in at the end of the year, and that is based on unspent salaries there. So if you have a lot of vacant positions and the existing employees do better under the EIP, to me, this, I guess the idea here is this is on top of the EIP, but if this succeeds, then the EIP payouts will be greatly reduced, or should we even be doing it if we're doing this instead? Is that, that's one question I have. Two, are we doing a longevity bonus here or a retention bonus? If we're doing a retention bonus, then I think we should rewrite this. The retroactivity of the date doesn't make sense to me. You do it as of, let's say, September 1st. I mean, I think what Jeremiah would like the best is to have some kind of a degree of assurance that in a year from now, I can get through a winter and a summer and hope I've got some people to do it without constantly scrambling. So if we did it, I think a start date would be September 1st or something along that line. The way it's written, it's more like a longevity bonus than a retention. And if it's a retention bonus, I think it should be an all or nothing. You sign it, you get the bonus. You need to work there a year. The proration, if you start to go into the proration, which is a part of the technical aspects of this, then you're getting back into more of a longevity bonus, I guess. But there's no guarantee there that you're going to have that person at the end of the year. They can take a prorated portion of the fund and move on or retire or whatever. The carrot is this bonus at the end of a year, and you can front it up at the beginning. I don't have a problem with that. But the proration kind of defeats the purpose of a retention bonus. So those are kind of my ideas there. I'm looking at the attachment B and who gets what, and I'm not sure I'm in tune with that, and I'll take probably a stronger look at that. But Mayor, up front you said something like it would cost 60-some thousand. Is that what you said?
No,
I see the total cost here at 100.
I said it's about 62% of.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood you on that then.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
One last question for the council members and maybe Crystal too. I mean, we have laborers and operators under a different union. We also have trades. I don't know if we have any painters right now or plumbers on staff, but each one is in a different health care system. And for a long time, the laborers had a much cheaper health care system than the operators did. But did you hear numbers on what both of them are right now? I'd be curious.
Well, not distinct, but I know Jeremiah was working on a project that would get us 80% of what, you know, the outside or the ones that are competing for this labor pool. And I mean, they're not asking for the sun and the moon, but to bring us up to somewhere where 80% of what they're getting, I have no figures now.
Okay, for many years, we used to pay for the laborers had the cheapest health care plan in the city, and we were at actually 100% on that. We were trying to do an equal amount of money across the board for all the unions, but I know theirs has gone up since then. I just don't know where it's at compared to the other main component over there as operators and what that would be. But, you know, I'd be curious to see that too. But anyway, there's I think, a lot of questions on how to proceed on this one. So.
You know, it's interesting. First of all, I'm going to be relooking at this and we might be postponing it, but do you remember those sit-downs we had and then the offer we presented? And I immediately started getting, they didn't like it. There was internal issues of who got what and more. So I just pulled it. If you don't want it, you don't agree to it, it was gone. So that's what happened. That similarly rejected is what it was. So this is something new. Gotta do something. But anyway, I'll be working on this. Might be postponing this back a meeting or two to work out. Everyone had some good questions. Doesn't mean we all know something needs to be done, and we'll get something across the finish line, I'm sure. Just don't know what it is. This is a start, and it's on paper. And we'll start looking at some of the things you brought up. Thank you. Okay, next on the list is item number six, resolution 5133, a resolution awarding a contract to SunGard Public Sector, the amount of $430,670 for the Fairbanks Emergency Communications Center, FECC, computer-aided dispatch, CAD, and software upgrade. This has not been introduced yet, and we'll have our IT guru, Mr. Sanders, bring us through this.
Yeah, so this is something that, you know, we've been paying for forever already. It's just an upgrade to the CAD system. It'll end up being an additional cost of like $50,009.83. It will take a lot of our servers away and put them on the cloud. It takes away seven servers, so that'll be good for us when we go to replace servers. That's seven less that we have to replace, and it'll save us a few hundred thousand dollars in our capital expenses by moving to the cloud. And it's also more secure, and they can get all the updates and all that. So I was happy to see that this is coming through, and it's been a long work. Christy spent a lot of time working on this over the last couple of years, getting it ready. So now we're ready to move to the cloud with our CAD.
Any questions, Mr. Ringstead?
Well, the subscription is an annual fee that will go forever. Is that correct?
Yes.
So every year we're bumping the budget $380,000, kind of indefinitely.
You already have been.
What do you mean we already have been?
You've had this CAD for years and years and years, and it's already in the 300 plus thousand.
So is this an additional subscription?
The expense is the $50,009.83. And then it'll get its normal. It gets a little, you know, just like everything else, it increases with inflation every year. But
what's the increase? I mean, what's the increase? $50,009.83. What the fiscal note says here is the subscription $380,000. But it's not a new subscription. That's something we're already doing.
You have encumbered money, and this is for the total cost with the $50,000 price increase is what it is. You encumber this money in the contract of your budget, but this is showing what the prices are on the increase. Total cost.
Yes, I'm not total cost of the program, but we're already doing it. Whether we do this or don't do this, we're already spending the $380.
Yeah.
So the cost of doing this is really $50.
Yeah.
And it's a one-time money.
The fiscal note, we are currently paying $301,000, almost $302,000 per year for this. It's not a subscription at this time. It is a renewal, annual renewal of software. Now that they're moving to the cloud, it will be higher because now we're looking at $386,600. A subscription, however, you're going to save on the servers, the cost of the servers and maintenance and contractual cost associated with that server. So the cost might be neutral, or you may actually have a savings.
Mr. Marney.
So is there other incentives like maintenance, less maintenance? I mean,
yeah, there's definitely other incentives. Right now, the system that we have is outdated. This will allow us to keep upgraded as they upgrade. We'll get all the upgrades. Okay.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Mike, when we expand a duplication of efforts into the training center, you're talking about doing that. Does this include that kind of expansion? Will we have enough in the licensing be able to use the same stuff there?
I don't think it'll cost us. I'd have to double check. I don't think it'll cost us anything extra because we'll already have the license. It'll be the same. So the same organizations will still have the same licenses. So
I just sometimes they limit them. You can have 20 or 30. I just wasn't sure if that was a situation here.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to cost us any. It's based on organization. The subscriptions are based on organizations using it, not locations.
Okay.
So I don't think there'll be any extra cost.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Mr. Clayworth, your light is on.
Should be off.
Okay. Well, Ms. Ringstad, any questions from you, sir? Okay. We'll move on to resolution 5134, resolution designated sex signing authority for banking and investment liquidities and custodial accounts. So, take a look at this. Margarita, you want to bring us through this?
Yes. One of our previous signers retired, Clem Cluton. And so we are replacing Clem Cluton as a signer with Jacob Merritt, the Human Resources Director. And at one point in time, we did have the Human Resources Director as a signer. So that brings that on to all of the accounts that we have.
Any questions? Mr. Ringstad.
So why is our chief financial officer only on one of these?
The AML accounts and the Key Trust accounts, I do a lot of transactions with that, initiate a lot of the transfers. And I know it's the role of the chief financial officer, but I'm also very involved in the reconciliation of the account. And for just segregation of duty purposes, I have not added myself to those two accounts. That keeps me with the ability to do a lot of what I do with those accounts without jeopardizing our internal controls.
So you're removing any appearance of conflict of interest?
That is true. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Next, we're going to go to the list of abatements. Sue, you wanted this?
Well, it would be nice to know what's going on. So I'd like to know that we're doing more than just sitting on these, because snow's going to fly soon. And I'm not sure who to talk to about this. We have a new building department head now, I believe.
What's that now?
We have a new building department head, correct?
We have a new department head, yes.
So maybe Christoph could talk about this a little bit?
Actually, you know, Christoph, come on up, but I'll tell you what we're doing. Margarita, what's our budget amounts that are available?
Okay, the council appropriated $225,000 to date. We have a balance of $198,524.
I have directed the property at on page 2, 305 Kellum Street. That will be knocked down via Fairbanks Rescue Mission. It's a property that caught fire. They put it out. They brought the fire department in to do a controlled burn. That just didn't go very well. And so even more haphazard. So the owner will pay for the tippage fees and we'll pay for this knocking it down and removing it. Small structure, don't know what the budget will be on it. And then we come to the big one. We come to the Alaska Motor Inn Hotel Motel.
Which, is that on here?
Every property is different. And that has a weekly to twice a month change. Talking with the owner yesterday, he's in the process of selling it. I'm putting everyone in a room within the next week or two. And the thought is the two-story has to be knocked down. The three-story, we'll see if that can stay. I've talked to Christoph here on Friday, and I said, no matter what happens on that building, at the end of the day, it all has to meet code. And they have to show me financials where they're not going to a bank. They have to show me financials, money in a bank, to do what they want to do. Now, there's a lot with that building, there's a lot of ownership chain of title issues. So they're going to be employing someone to get quiet title on this. So we have, I have Christina right now with contract. She's putting out bids on both the two-story and the three-story. So I'm gonna put everyone in the room. And it sounds like the two-story, no matter what, between the person who owns it and selling it and the person buying it, two-story should be coming down. So I'm gonna say, okay, you go get quiet title. It can take, you know, 4 months to a year. In the meantime, we're gonna knock it down. We're gonna put a lien on it. And when you figure out, and we'll let you know what this is, what the amount is, and when you figure out the purchase and the quiet title, there's a lien on this. But this two story's most likely coming down because it had the fire. And it's just, I've walked through it, it's just not a, what I would consider rehabable condition. And when you guys figure out the ownership, reimburse the city. I want to see the money that you have to do this. So those are some of the parts of the equation that we're dealing with right now on that property.
So,
Ms. Sprinkle.
Do you see then the abatement happening before the...
Yes.
Snow flies?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So what that's going to cost, we don't know yet, but... You know, we have a reserve, don't want to go out of budget. Talked about this with Margarita. And then there's a couple of us here that over the next week we're going to be targeting to expend money on once we get start getting bids on what it'll cost on the Alaska Motor Inn.
What
yes.
About the property on 7th, they'd gotten the insurance check, mm-hmm. It was a fire. Who's doing what? I mean, when does that?
Well, that is, I'll be discussing that with the owners, and I'll be letting, that's a private conversation I've not had yet, but I've made a determination of direction. And I want to have a private conversation with the owners before I announce what the direction is.
I just wanted to make sure that we all knew that you, and I appreciate this, are really trying to clean up what has been burned.
Yeah.
Before yeah. We go into... bigger stages. I think that's really smart, yeah. And it's I appreciate
and,
that.
You know, walked around that building with Bob and with Clem and with Christoph, and it's not rehabable.
Well, it wasn't great before.
And it's on the priority list right after Kellam. It's number 3 on the list. You know, Kellam's in play. We're going after Kellam. Alaska Motor Inn is number 2, and 7th Avenue is number 3. That should probably take up our budget.
Yeah.
Mr. Marnie.
What I would like to see out of this list, which I thank you for doing this, mm-hmm. but a priority, you know, here's number 1, mm-hmm. you know, just like you indicated verbally that this is what we're going after, and yeah. We can just check them off as we go.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. I'll put that together for you. That's a great idea, Mr. Marnie. Mr. Ringstead.
As we were roaming around the other day looking at the property there on Lacey Street, I mean, there's vehicles sitting out there and I think a barbecue, like somebody's still trying to live in there.
Which one's this?
Motor Inn.
Oh, yeah, I talked with them about that. They have a caretaker who's living there. And, you know, I was looking at him and say, this is what I told him. Whatever happens here, don't embarrass me. Don't embarrass me. I've given you lots of latitude. Do not embarrass me. If I think that you're starting to embarrass me, that whole thing's coming down quickly, and there's liens on it. I'm going to work with you. You're going to clean up this property, and it's this year, period.
Do we know if that the owners even are aware, aware that
yes.
people are in there?
Yes.
So we're relying on them to get them out.
It's supposed to be a caretaker, a person in there. And, hey, I think it looks poopy just like you do. Go by it every day. Every day. And it's number one on the list. Well, we've got number two in play already, but number one is complications to it. But welcome to the world of real estate and abatement. And but Mr. Marty, that's a great idea on a priority list that we'll be looking at. And that way, when you're budgeting next year, you can see what our priorities are, and maybe we can make some guesstimations of what the cost will be. So, which brings me to a different thought on abatements here. Last year, we knocked down the property on the corner of Front Street and Hamilton. The cost, I believe, was $74,000. Just for one. They're both about $74,000. Yeah. Oh. And I got a real estate estimate of value for that lot. And it's at $65,000 plus or minus if we want to sell it. So now we have to make a determination of policy or direction. Do we sell it? Anything that we, any revenue that comes from the sale or lease of that property goes into our permanent fund. So do you want to sell it, or sell it with an incentive of if you build something here within 2 years, we'll discount the price? These are thoughts and options for you to think about. The way you can do that is you can you don't title it over to anyone until the first takeout of the construction loan when they're building something. That way you have cost certainty, you have certainty that something's being built here. Mm-hmm. So these are thoughts for you to think about. You know, I know that we want development, reconstruction. We don't want someone to buy this and have it as a adjoining yard. We want a house up. So this is one way to do it. Ms. Sprinkle.
I'd like to see it not land banked. That's what I'd like to see. So an incentive would be really great.
I believe this entire council concurs with you. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So one of the ways to do that is, okay, if it's worth $65,000 or $75,000, we'd accept maybe an offer for $50,000 with the incentive of within 2 years, you're building something here and it's under contract, but we don't title it to you until you have your construction loan in place at a local bank.
Would the bank have an issue with that?
No, it's no.
Okay.
And no matter what, they go to this gentleman here for a building permit.
Just want to make sure it works. That's what I want.
So what I'll do is I'll put together a resolution over the next couple weeks, putting that on the market with those incentives in place and restrictions in place, and see what you think for your review. Mr. Ringstead.
You know,
and Mr. Marnie.
As we go through this list, we're talking about, you know, cleaning them up, doing whatever we have to do. And I am going on the assumption that most of these we will spend as much or more than the property is actually ultimately worth as a vacant lot. And that's, in my mind, that's just something to get from here to there, we're gonna have to suck it up and do it. I don't expect that we're gonna make money on any of this, but it, in the short run, I mean, that we will make something ultimately 20 years from now as we gotta, somebody paying taxes on this thing again, but I just am assuming that that's what most of this is going to be. If we can come close to, you put a lien on it, but you're only going to get what somebody's going to pay for it. So I think we do the best we can and try to limit our losses.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a, you made a determination 2 years ago to go this direction with the money you started putting into the budget. Now it's time to see if we can get remuneration on it from the sale. Within last month, you put a lien on the property across the street from it for the $74,000. So we're using the instruments that are available to us on this. Ms. Sprinkle?
When we get paid back for a lien, does that go into a general fund?
I don't think so, but we'll have to, that's a great question. I know what you want to do with the money, Ms. Sprinkle.
I just wanted to know where it goes.
On a lien, it depends on if it is associated with abatement, it will go back to the general fund under an abatement recovery. If it's associated with the utility billing, it will go into garbage collection services associated. So it depends on what the lien is for.
Okay. All right.
So the lien on the lien that we put on two meetings ago would go into the general fund.
Perfect.
Yeah. Once it's paid.
Great. Thank you.
And then I would ask our wise and experienced city attorney here, is there a time frame or a process where we can foreclose on our lien? So my thought would be, as a policy, give them 2 years to either pay it off or start making a program with us.
Is that starting?
Mr. Marnie?
Oh, wait, sorry. I had my hand up. Can I quick?
Okay.
That's great. When I see something like the creamery that took how many years? 20 years?
What's that now?
The creamery paid its lien, and it took how many years to get that done?
I think let me double check on that. I think that the new owners are in the process of wanting to pay or going through the process of paying off that lien. But let me double check on that. And, you know, if we got liens on properties, it's time to start enforcing our rights.
For sure. Thank you.
Mr. Marnie.
Well, the only issue I have, are you stuck on the two-year program instead of?
No, I'm not.
You know, to me, I'd like instant satisfaction, you know. So maybe a year.
Okay. I would, you know, no matter what happens on these, if we come to an agreement with a homeowner, I'll be bringing it to you for resolution of concurrence. This is our payback or our program for your concurrence. Simple as that. And, you know, and we're in new waters. So we'll guide this ship together. Simple as that. But, you know, some of us are more now in the present, Mr. Marnie. Ms. Sprinkle.
I just want to say welcome to your new seat, Christoph.
Thank you.
Since you're there, Christoph, it's your first meeting. Welcome. Why don't you talk to us about the electrical engineer or contract or inspector that you need?
Yeah. So with the retirement of Clam, we lose our electrical inspector position. Although, you know, we don't lose the plans examiner position, so I just roll over building official and plans examiner. But, yeah, so right now we're trying to fill that position. And we are staying active in trying to fill the structural inspector position also. And, you know, other happenings in the building department is we're getting a lot of our paper files, we're getting them scanned digitally, so I mean, it's not going to be a overnight process. It's going to take quite a while, but we'll eventually have all our building records digitally, so you no longer have to come in and, you know, dig through those paper files. You can just...
You mean I might not fall off the stool anymore going up to the top rack and sue the city?
And that was a main motivator. You and Vince Merlot.
I know.
The main visitors. And then, then the other hopes are to eventually become, you know, have a portal online so that the building permit process is done essentially all online. You know, the submittal of the, not just the building permit, but the documents, the drawings, the payment. And, so, you know, it takes a little bit of time, but I think we're going to get there.
You know, I saw Statistically speaking, I believe in 2023, you produced 1,023 building permits and 240 working days, so you're averaging about 4.75 permits a day.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Some of them, you know, a little bit easier to turn around than others. Yeah. But yeah.
Yesterday, I was having tacos at the Lat 65.
Okay.
Across the street was a building. Is it a house or a little office that's being built there? I'm sort of curious. Structure is up, one story. I'd say it's about 2,000 square feet. Two-car garage in front. Yeah, right on Eagle Avenue and Front Street there.
Yeah, those are actually one of those arson burnt down.
Okay.
If we're talking about the same. And those are duplexes.
Okay.
So residential duplexes and okay.
Great.
So I'll need to look into if they're rebuilding the burnt down one, though.
Yeah. So. Mr. Clayworth.
Welcome aboard. Thank you for taking the position. While we're asking what's going up, what is the building that's going to be at the intersection of College Road and Illinois there on the northeast corner?
It'll be a Raising Cane's, which they specialize in chicken strips and chicken sandwiches.
It's fast food.
Fast food, yes.
Yeah. Takes the place of a Kentucky Fried Chicken, so it's a chicken site. Okay. We'll call it Jerry's Chicken Coop. Any other questions for our new building official? Christoph, thank you and welcome. Okay. Mr. Sanders, emergency service patrol contract discussion. This will not be a pleasant discussion.
We brought Christina in. Can she come up for it too? But yeah, yes. Basically the ESP contract came out. We had one bidder, and it came in at $474,600. I think $500.
Yeah. What was our original? What was our last contract at?
I didn't analyze it by like the total cost, but it was like closer to like 30 something an hour. This bid came in at $65 an hour. And we usually have somebody 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's where that cost is coming from. Well, double the cost for sure. But Security Services Northwest was our only bidder for that contract. We bid for them to have, you know, one person for each shift. So that's kind of on them how they're going to staff it.
At that sort of price, you know, you have to start thinking of alternatives. Okay.
More than officers
make. I beg your pardon, Lonnie?
That's more than officers make.
Yes, it is. Okay. Any other questions for Christina? And we will be looking at alternatives. Thank you, Christina.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay. Citywide vacancies, HR. Jake, you're up.
Good morning, everybody. So just to run all of you through the current openings that the city has, we just closed last night on an accounting specialist to focus on payroll for Margarita. She had 10 applicants, a lot of which look really good. She was very excited. I know that Jess in my office is very excited for that process, so we're feeling good about that. Looking at Tom gave you guys the update about the deputy city attorney position. It's kind of following the trend that we expected. No applicants at this time, but we expect that as summer dies down to start to see a change there. The information I have for police officers, it looks like they've had about 44 applicants this year. I'm still getting used to the site that tracks a lot of that information, and so it looks like 44 and about 30 passed that first round of testing to actually get to Teal and the process that they use next door. it looks like it's following the same numbers and trends as our dispatcher application process looks like. It looks like the number of people that apply, and then it gets heavily shifted by the number of people who can pass the first test to then get to the interview phase and more testing. And so you end up with this pool of 44 to get down to, I believe, 6 or 7 have made it to the area where we're considering offers and getting to those final stages, which is pretty good from what I can tell. As far as dispatch is concerned, applications have followed the trend that I expected this year. It's slow for most of the second quarter, most of the summer. We're picking up now. Two new dispatchers started this month. Two are currently in a background phase. We have multiple applicants in the testing phase. As of this morning, there are 7. And then also acknowledging that giving the room more than 2 or 3 trainees at a time is overwhelming. And so that's looking good considering what we can train at one time. Code compliance inspector, electrical for Christoph, no applicants so far. What we've looked at, we've partnered with IBEW to try to figure out how we make that position at the competitive fair market range that it should be. The union is advising that they're confident that they can help us fill that position if we bring the pay for that position in line with the NECA rate, which right now would move the range E rate, which is that 100% spot on the IBEW pay scale. If we move it to $50, which is what they're recommending, it would be a roughly $10 increase for that code inspector position. However, would make it competitive, and they think that they could fill it, considering that's leaving a pretty big gap in Christoph's department. That's the recommendation that we're making at this time. The structural position, there's been one local applicant that's currently being reviewed. The assistant fire chief position opened this month. It'll close halfway through September to give plenty of time for applicants across the country to apply. He's got 4 applicants at this time, all of which look awesome from what we can tell. Public Works is also currently taking applications for their open permanent operator positions, and they were excited about some of the applications that they were seeing that some of the temps want to stay with us. Those are our current openings. I can also talk about totals for the year if you guys are interested in that, but if you're not, I don't need to get into that.
Mr. Ringstead.
Cheat sheet that trying to take notes here.
I have an email that I typed up for myself so that I don't.
Could you shoot it to us?
Of course.
Thank you.
And on the dispatch, is that local, not remote? Is that for local hire?
Yep. These are for people who anticipate being in the room.
Ms. Tidwell.
I heard you mention like the number of apps for police, and I'm curious about fire also. How many open positions are there?
Fire, we have filled all of the open positions.
And police?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's no open positions.
So he has a handful starting, but at this time with what's budgeted, minus the assistant chief roles, if we're just talking firefighter paramedics, which is I believe what you're asking, yes, those roles are filled to what's budgeted.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on. Finance Committee report, Margarita.
Good morning again, everyone. Finance Committee met on July the 25th, and we're starting the process of doing a cash flow analysis. And I know that we talk about the budget numbers a lot, but we also have to be mindful of what's happening on the cash side, because if we have to pay a payroll, we definitely need the cash. So they're starting that process, and
we're going to be looking at the general fund operating account and seeing, taking a look at it monthly. We mentioned the 10-year data, taking a look at what's happening with that our revenues in relationship to our expenditures. The committee also reviewed the June 30th reports with the fund balance at $13.3 million. The revenues were $20.91 million with expenditures at $20.94 million. The cash flow at that time was $28 million. Mr. Church did express some concerns regarding the shrinking economy and encouraged the committee to continue looking at long-term revenue sources. The next committee meeting is August the 22nd at 7 a.m., and we'll start looking at those cash flow numbers and, of course, the monthly reports. And that's all I have for the Finance Committee report.
Questions? Thank you, Margarita. Next, we're going to go to Mayor and Councilmember comments, and I'll bring you first to the memorandum from Danny here in regard to Ordinance 6286 as amended, an ordinance amending the 2024 operating capital budgets for the third time with all the amendments and the substitute versions. I did not ask for any public comment on this. As such, at our next meeting, we will be having that ordinance come up again for public comments. We'll move on from there. Is there like a deja vu with our attorney? Okay. Other city council member comments? Mr. Ringstead? Mr. Marty?
Good meeting, and thank you, Jake, for keeping us updated, and welcome, Mr. Christoph.
Ms. Tidwell? Ms. Sprinkle?
I was going to say that I met for Chena Riverfront Commission last week, I think, and they didn't meet quorum, so we have to have a special meeting next week.
Ms. Rogers.
Well, I just wanted to also welcome Christoph. This was wonderful, good news. I'm really, really glad to hear that you're going to be involved in a regular interaction with the council. And you've got a long history here at the city already, and it's, I think, real important that people of your caliber continue on for another length of period of time, and appreciate you making that effort to solidify that position. I'm not sure how long Clem was here, but let's hope that you're here for that length of time. All right, take care.
Mr. Clayworth.
Thank you, Mayor. Follow up on what Margarita was talking about a little bit in the Finance Committee. In the last day or two, the financial picture in America has changed somewhat, with the Dow dropping 1,000 points. And there's real concern about several factors in the economy. FOMC might have an emergency meeting and lower the interest rates, which affects our budget. And we had a real shot in the arm a year ago when the interest rates went up and gave us revenue, but I think you can almost count on 1% drop in that. We're seeing that even locally here with the money market accounts and things like that. So that's not good news for us, and it could even be worse for the permanent fund if we continue to take a dump in the markets for the latter part of the year here. So I hope this is not a repeat of 2008. Those were not fun times at the city when we saw our permanent fund disintegrate by about 25%. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on that. And thank you, Paul, for filling in. It's I know it's a load off Tom's mind to have you step in like that, and he needed to get back to work just for a little while. And then finally, one question on what's happening on the hot water system here at the city. Where are we at in that project? The heating.
It's been delayed a lot longer than I know the mayor and I are comfortable with. A little bit of decision paralysis between do we go steam, do we go gas, do we go hot water? It's been a frustrating journey on that project.
I thought we had made a decision we were going to go with hot water. I remember discussing that as a council.
We have, and we are. And we will. It's just time. I'm tired of this.
Okay.
The paralysis of decision making from the engineering department on this has not been acceptable. Period.
Okay.
Ms. Sprinkle.
I forgot that I needed to excuse myself from the next work meeting, August 20th. I'll be manning an election precinct. So I'll be out all day helping democracy.
Okay. Council? Oh, Mr. Ringstead.
Let me follow up on Jerry's comment. We did think a little bit about where our permanent fund is, and I think as we run we take 15% of our revenue or something coming off the permanent fund, and that is a significant piece if we have the market change that might be starting. With the 5-year rolling average, it doesn't hit us so much immediately. But in year 2, 3, and 4, and as we're looking at a longer range cash flow, that's one of the things we've been talking about a little bit with finance. But I think Jerry's absolutely right. If we get 2 or 3 bad years, it's going to significantly impact our cash flow.
Okay. Council, we had 1, 2, 3, 4 ordinances here today. This is where we do our heavy work. We have heavy work still to do on 3 of them. And I'd rather have it done here, like the way we do it, versus a meeting on a second reading. And so we'll be getting back on 3 of these ordinances on different time frames and reworking. That's what we do. It's never over. It's never done. We're adjourned.
Right. Oh. That was up.